Some people defy expectations.
What Stokes has achieved is so special.
Greta Thunberg, Nelson Mandela, even the Jamaican bobsleigh team. They achieved more than anyone believed they could. Peter was one of those people, an unknown, impulsive fisherman who, against all odds, left a legacy that we can still learn from. Maybe if God could use him, he can also raise us above our own expectations. Could we achieve more with him than we think is possible?
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Forge. If you're watching online, I want to welcome you too. Thank you so much for joining us today. I don't know whether you would consider yourself a fairly confident person. If you would, can you confidently put your hand up? Okay, yeah, so there's a number of us. Okay, I would say that I'm a fairly confident person throughout much of my life. I think probably because of the security of family and the affirmation that my parents gave and others, other kind of family members. I think I've always lived confidently. I think my biggest wobble really came post-COVID. And that I'd been leading the church for coming up to 30 years, so kind of I ought to know what I'm doing. And I just remember when in coming back after COVID that we closed down two of our locations, one at Thurston and one at Eye. And when we started to meet, we couldn't meet here. We had to meet in the high school, and it felt really difficult. And it was one of those times when inside I started to ask all kinds of questions about myself. And I started to live with this fear of this, that I'm not good enough, that I'm not good enough. And it was horrible because it just made me question everything. And it was just because things hadn't gone as I had imagined or planned. Kind of nothing happened like people imagined or planned during and after COVID, did it? So I think that it was just that insecurity. But boy, did that insecurity hit really hard around that time. So I wonder whether you would identify with how I felt then, because I'm not suffering from this. It's not that I think that I'm great. I just don't live with the insecurity of I'm not good enough at the moment. But I wonder whether you do. Whether you would say, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough to hang around with certain popular people. I'm not good enough to be able to go for the job that I would love to do, but I'm not good enough. Or I'm not good enough for the person that I would love to marry. Or even you are married and you still feel not good enough for that person. I'm not good enough to serve in church. I mean, I'd love to play in the band, but I'm just not good enough. Or I'm not good enough to make a difference in life. It is so easy to get into a place where we live with what we would call low self-esteem or low self-confidence, where we view others better than ourselves. And we struggle with how we feel because we just think that we're rubbish. And so we live with these insecurities and we struggle to make a brave move. That's what we were looking at last week. You know, there might be something inside which you think, I would love to be able to step out in faith and do something, but I'm not good enough. And so it holds us back and we live what would be as safer life as possible to kind of protect ourselves from the fear that actually I'm not good enough. Sometimes people mistake that for humility. You know, that to be humble, we have to think of ourselves in a poor light. But actually, that's not what humility is. Humility isn't thinking bad of yourself. I mean, probably the most humble person that I have ever read about and encountered is Jesus himself. And he didn't go around saying, I'm really rubbish, aren't I? He didn't do that. He lived with a huge amount of self-confidence. He knew who he was, but he demonstrated humility through serving other people, through washing his disciples' feet, through healing, through... Well, just his whole demeanor was one of humility. So it's not, I'm not good enough means I'm humble. Humility is actually having the confidence of who I am, but being willing to put others before myself. But I love hearing stories of people who perhaps originally didn't think that they were good enough, but actually end up being the hero to the story. People who are willing to kind of take that brave move, that step forward, and against all the odds, make a difference. So let me just give you one example which I've been following recently. If I were to say to you the name Alan Bates, would you know who I was talking about? Yeah, of course you would do. Okay, there he is. Okay, an ordinary, everyday man who's played such a pivotal role in the whole post office scandal that is still going on today. If you haven't watched the TV program, Alan Bates versus the Post Office, starring Toby Jones, okay, when you get home, all right, you have to watch it. It is a brilliant, brilliant ITV drama depicting the story of Alan Bates and others who have gone through an horrendous time. You know, just this program alone, I think, has raised the awareness of what has been taking place, so much so that the government have got so involved and they've had all kind of inquiries going on about it. But go back to the real Alan Bates. This man here, he had been a shop owner. He was a sub postmaster in Llandudno in Wales. And he had his post office contract cancelled because some money had kind of appeared to have gone missing. Basically, the post office had brought in this new system called Horizon, and they were confident that it didn't have errors. And so, all of a sudden, coming up on the sub-postmaster's screens were that they were £1,000 short one day, or they were £6,000 short. And the post office said that if the money is short, you have to pay for it yourself. And so, therefore, there were these sub-postmasters when all of a sudden, when they thought they were acting completely fairly and correctly, the computer was showing that they were short of money. Well, that happened to Alan Bates, and Alan Bates lost his contract. He wasn't prosecuted, but he lost his contract. And so he set up a website just to see whether other people had experienced the same kind of situation as himself. And in doing so, he discovered that there were hundreds of other sub-postmasters who had got themselves into all kinds of problems. The post office went around convicting them of fraud, of money laundering, whatever. And this led to people having huge debts. It led to some people going to prison. And it led to at least two people, I think, taking their own lives. An absolutely horrendous situation. But against all odds, this man, Alan Bates, this ex-shopkeeper, became the founder and campaigner for the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance, becoming the central figure. If you watch TV, even probably tomorrow, something will come up in the news about this. And who will be there? It will be this man, a nobody, someone who was just running a shop, and yet he finds himself in a place where he's fighting to see justice and a payout for those who have been falsely accused. See, I hate the situation, but I love the story of this man. Just love it. Willing to step up and to be able to look to make a difference. You know, there are numerous stories of ordinary people ending up doing extraordinary things against all the odds because they refuse to listen to that voice that says, nah, not you. You're not good enough. So throughout March, what we are going to do is we are going to be looking at the life of a very ordinary person, a not good enough character who Jesus looks at and sees huge potential in, and against all the odds, raises him to become the leader of the early church that has now spread across the entire world. And against all odds, this fisherman, Simon Peter, became the first person to walk on water. He became the first person to see who Jesus really was. And he's the one who, when the pressure came on, denied even knowing Jesus. And yet God still uses him, despite that failure, to be the leading person to start the New Testament church. So that's what we're going to be doing. I tell you, it's quite an adventure. It's quite a story as we look at this man's life. And what we will see as we go through is that we will see parallels between his life and our life, his emotions and our emotions. Because you see, whenever we come to reading the Bible, it's really important to understand that it's true because it happened, but also it's true because it happens. In other words, what people experience in the Bible are the same experiences that we will have today, which is why the Bible is such a living book, because it still speaks to us today. So we're going to look today at Peter and his kind of first encounters with Jesus. Now, if you've been doing the Better Habit, if you remember last series of Catalyst, remember Better Habits are one of the things that helps us to change and to take some steps forward. And I really encourage people to start reading and taking one of the Luke Gospels and to be able to read a chapter a day. And so we've got about 35, 40 people doing that. So thank you for those of you who are involved in doing that. But if so, you will have come across this reading just about a week or so ago. And so I hope that in remembering reading that, it will start to come alive again for you today. So we're going to be looking at Luke chapter 5, and we're going to start at verse 1. And it says this. It says, "One day, as Jesus was preaching on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God." Jesus was about 30 years of age at this point. He was really early on in his kind of public ministry. So before this, he would have been working for his dad. He would have been a carpenter. And then suddenly, Jesus at this age kind of steps forward to start speaking and to start his ministry. And so he was attracting huge crowds straight away because he healed people. And if you meet someone who can heal people, you kind of want to hang out with them, don't you? But also what Jesus said was just coming alive to people. They'd never heard someone who had such authority when he spoke. And he would take little jibes at the religious leaders. And so the ordinary people would really like that as well, you know? Ah, there's someone who's willing to stand up for us lot. And so these hundreds, if not thousands of people would gather around to listen to Jesus. I mean, we see it today, someone like Jordan Peterson, don't we? Jordan Peterson can go into a venue of 3,000 people and just fill it with a whole bunch of young men. Why? Because he's got a message which young men want to be able to hear. And Jesus was this charismatic character that people wanted to listen to. So the crowds came, they pressed in. Jesus was on the edge of Lake Galilee, and the crowds, and to be able to listen, they would have kept stepping forward to try and get a bit closer. So Jesus was getting closer and closer to the water. And then he spots this, says this. He noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. So Lake Galilee is this vast lake that you find in Israel that is teeming with fish. And many people then, as they still will do today, made their living through fishing and selling their catch. So there were lots of these little family businesses that were being run around the edge of Lake Galilee. And so I just see Bridget sitting down here. Bridget and myself and Peter and Lynn as well. We went back in 2019, we went out to the Holy Land and we had 10 days out there. And we spent the last few days around Lake Galilee. And it was fantastic. Absolutely beautiful. So we went out onto a boat going onto Lake Galilee. And so there was this guide who was there, and you can see him. He was just demonstrating this is the kind of thing that would happen when people would go out fishing on Lake Galilee. And so they would have these nets, and these nets would have little weights on them. And so that when they throw the net, and as you can see here, is to try and keep it as flat as possible so it covers a wide area, and then the weights pull the net down, and that's the way in which you catch the fish. And so these nets were really, really important. They were key tools for the fishing trade. And so therefore, fishermen would have to look after them and make sure that there weren't holes and to make sure that they were kept in good quality. So it goes on by saying this. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner. Now, Simon is Simon Peter, who we're looking at. His name hasn't been changed yet. He is known as Simon Peter. But Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. Now, this wasn't the first time that Simon Peter had met Jesus. Jesus had gone to Capernaum, gone to the synagogue, because Jesus was Jewish, and so every Sabbath he would go to the synagogue, and so there was Jesus. He'd been speaking in the synagogue, and Simon Peter had been there listening. And then Simon Peter had invited Jesus to come back to his house for a meal afterwards. So it's a bit like, I mean, I'm not dropping a hint, but it's a bit like, you know, you could do that with me. No, seriously, you could. But anyway, and so Jesus goes back to Simon Peter's house, and Simon Peter's mother-in-law has a fever. She is very, very unwell. And I don't know whether Peter invited Jesus to go back in because he knew that he would be able to heal his mother-in-law, or whether he just wanted to spend time. We don't know. But anyway, Jesus got to hear about the mother-in-law being unwell, and so he did the miraculous and he healed her. So for Simon Peter, depending on his relationship with his mother-in-law, this was fantastic news or not. But anyway, so Simon Peter had not only listened to Jesus, but he had seen Jesus do something remarkable. So he knew that, wow, what a man. And so when Jesus says, Simon, do you mind if I jump into your boat? Simon Peter's not going to say, get lost, it's my boat. No, not at all. He's going to be chuffed a bit that Jesus is using his boat. So it goes on. When he had finished speaking, this is Jesus, he said to Simon, now go out where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. Master, Simon replied, we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing. Every time I read this, I so feel for Simon Peter in this situation. You know, Jesus is brilliant at teaching. Jesus is brilliant at being able to heal people. And Peter is just in awe of this man. And now Jesus is talking to Simon Peter about Simon Peter's sweet spot, which is fishing. And he has to admit, but I'm rubbish at it. Because I went fishing last night and I caught absolutely nothing. Now, this isn't a pastime. I have been fishing and caught nothing, and it's just frustrating. But when it's your livelihood, that is a desperate night's work. And I just wonder if, and only because I think that Peter might be like me, whether something stirred inside when Jesus said, throw your nets out, go into deep water and throw your nets out again. Because Jesus, who was a carpenter, of course, is telling Peter, who's a fisherman, how to fish. And if you've ever met people who are willing to tell you how to do your job when they don't do your job, yeah? You know what it's like, don't you? Flipping annoying, isn't it? And so there is Peter, who's the fisherman, and Jesus is telling him how to do it. So it would be like me going into Sarah's school. Sarah teaches at a primary school, and she's had a nightmare lesson with year six. Okay, so the whole lesson has been purely crowd control rather than teaching because of the chaos caused by some of the year sixes. And then me telling Sarah how she should teach. Now, can I just say, if that happened, I would be speaking from hospital at this point, okay? So just to be aware of that. But Simon Peter's response to Jesus' kind of request is flipping extraordinary. It's this. He says, but if you say so, I'll let the nets down again. But if you say so, that is the best response we can ever make to Jesus. Just is. It's the best response. But if you say so. Because as we've highlighted before, Jesus teaches about how to live, how to love, how to build relationships. He teaches how to forgive, how to be generous, how to use our money, how to be compassionate. And do you know what? To live that kind of way is so tough at times because it goes against everything that we feel like doing. So therefore, to say, because I'm sure Peter would say, Jesus, don't be stupid. You don't fish during the daytime. And secondly, we've tried that one, you know, throwing nets into deep water. It's a nice try, but we have had a go. That's what we did last night. He doesn't do that. He just says, but if you say so. At that, for me, that shows incredible trust, incredible faith. And a belief in Jesus. So let me ask you a question. For those of you who would call yourselves followers of Jesus, who would identify with Simon Peter, when did you last say that to Jesus? When did you last say to him, I don't feel like it, I don't want to, but because you say so? In other words, where has he been prodding you or prompting you to pick something up or to lay something down? Maybe it's to give up a habit, or maybe it's to step out in faith and we think, but I'm not good enough. But if you say so, where is it that God might be speaking to you right now? And he's asking you to say, just trust me. And he's looking for this response, but if you say so. Maybe I know that we've got Easter coming up, and we've got some baptisms at Easter, and we've got some baptisms coming up on Pentecost Sunday as well. I am so looking forward to those times. But maybe for some of you here, baptism is one of those things that you've put it off. You don't see the need, but then you're reminded of Jesus' words. One, that Jesus himself got baptized, but secondly, the last words that we have recorded of Jesus saying this to his disciples, go and make disciples of all nations. And what were they to do? They were to baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And so maybe, just maybe, for someone here, this is your next brave move. That you need to take, even if you don't think that, I don't understand it. But if Jesus says so, then I will. Look what happens next in this story of Peter and Jesus. This is how it goes on. And this time, so remember, all night, fishing, throwing into deep water, catching, nothing. Then this time, throws it out. Their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. And a shout for help brought their partners, remember this is a little family business, brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. Now, that is some catch of fish. And do you know what? I wish what happened there would happen to us every time. Whenever we said, well, if you say so, Jesus, and we do it, we get the most extraordinary results. I really, really, really wish that was the case. And do you know what? Sometimes it will be, but not always. Because sometimes we have to wait. Sometimes we have to wait to see the reward. Sometimes we won't even see that reward until we meet Jesus himself face to face when we arrive in heaven. But this event for Simon Peter highlighted something. It highlighted the difference between Jesus and Simon Peter. I honestly think it stirred something in him. Of being in the presence of Jesus made Simon Peter, feel so inadequate, so far short, so sinful, so not good enough to even be in Jesus' presence. that he recognized the presence of greatness, and he just knew that he didn't deserve to be there. And honestly, that's sometimes how I feel on a Sunday morning when it comes to the worship, and we're focusing our worship on Jesus, and I'm thinking about who he is, and I'm thinking, Fenning, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Because I am so far short, so far short. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, oh Lord, please leave me. I am such a sinful man. For he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him. Rather than the miracle just making them jump around for joy in a boat and making the boat all wobbly, you know, if you do that in a boat, he was overcome with the, oh my goodness, in whose presence am I? His partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. And Jesus replied to Simon. He says, don't be afraid. I love that. If you don't feel good enough, don't you worry. It's okay. From now on, you're going to be fishing for people. And as soon as they landed, they left everything and followed Jesus. It is an amazing response that Simon Peter makes, but it's also an incredibly impulsive response, a response that lacks, I think, responsibility. Do you remember they're helping to run a business? Jesus says, come on, you're going to come with me now. And so they just leave everything and off they go. So if you're an employer here, you've got to desperately hope, okay, that people don't take that seriously nowadays. Otherwise, we get completely stuffed, don't we? So why is it that at that point they just left everything? Why were they so irresponsible? Well, to understand that, we have to understand the context and the culture that was taking place when this was written. To give you an example, just picture a rundown. Here we go. Picture a rundown housing estate on the edge of Manchester. That is a housing estate on the edge of Manchester. I don't know quite where it is, but I'm not moving there. Gangs patrolled the streets at night, okay? Poverty, as you can see just with the whole setup there, is really, really obvious. 16-year-olds will just play football on the grass area there. Where they should be at school, but they've been excluded from school. So they basically just spend the day together kicking a football around. It's just them because they have no father at home. They have no money. They have no education. They have no prospect. They are destined for poverty. They're kicking a ball around on that grass when all of a sudden, who drives past? And one day, Pep Guardiola, the Manchester City manager, drives past or drives through the estate and he spots them. And he says to these 16-year-old boys, he says, you follow me, boys, and I'll make you Champions League players. My question is, how long would it take for those boys to think, yeah, I'll go and do that. I'm going to go and follow Pep right now. How long would it take for them to make that decision? Well, it would take them a split second, because for what they have and what they could become becomes so obvious to them. Basically, Pep is saying, you're playing football for fun, but you can play football for a living. Now, hold that thought, because take that to the context of Simon Peter. Simon Peter was a Jew. He was a Jewish boy. He'd been brought up a Jew, which means at the age of six, he'd have gone to school to learn the Torah. And the school would have been linked with the synagogue. And so he would have memorized the first five books of the Old Testament. It's called the Torah. He would have memorized every word of it. And at the age of 10, when the top children are chosen to go on, basically they've passed the 11 plus, you know, if you remember those awful times, which I didn't. At the age of 10, when top children were chosen to go on to the next level of their education, some kids just went back to their families and started to pick up the family trade. And so what do we know about Simon Peter? Simon Peter is a fisherman, which means that he's following the family trade, which means that he wasn't good enough to carry on in the educational system. Only the elite, the best of the best, ever moved on to the next two levels of education, which involved them memorizing the whole of the Old Testament. And they learned the art of questioning, of asking great questions and being able to debate the Old Testament, the Jewish scriptures. So for them to become the ultimate, which would be a disciple of a rabbi, the student would present themselves to a well-known rabbi, and they would say, I'd like to become your disciple. In other words, I want to learn from you. I want to be like you. And so the rabbi would then ask a whole load of questions. And in asking those questions, they were constantly thinking, could this person become like me? And if they felt that they would, if they felt that they had the caliber to be like that rabbi, the rabbi would then say to them, well, look, then you come and follow me. And the disciple would stay close to that rabbi, watching and learning, so that they could become like the rabbi. Rob Bell, in his book, Velvet Elvis, which is a book that I love, he writes this. He says, so at the age of 30, when a rabbi generally began his public teaching and training of disciples, we find Jesus teaching by the Sea of Galilee. He sees four fishermen, Simon and Andrew, James and John. And why are they fishermen? Because they're not disciples. They weren't good enough. They didn't make the cut. Jesus called the not good enoughs. So can you imagine what it must have been like to have a rabbi say, come follow me. To have a rabbi say, you can become like me. Of course you would leave everything. The rabbi believes that you can do what he does. He thinks you can be like him. And so Jesus took some boys who didn't make the cut and changed the course of human history. In other words, Peter and Simon Peter and Andrew and James and John were estate lads chosen by Pep. That's what they were. This was a whole new adventure. And this is what blows my mind. Honestly, this does. Jesus still chooses people who feel that they are not good enough, who don't make the grade. And he says, come follow me, because I believe that you can become like me. So he looks at me and says, I believe in you, that you can become like me, Steve. You can. You can do what I do. And Peter's focus was to change from fishing to investing in people as Jesus invested in people, in line with Jesus' focus. And Rob Bell, in his book, sums it up this way. He says, God has an incredibly high view of people. God believes people are capable of amazing things. That I've been told that I need to believe in Jesus, which is a good thing. But what I'm learning is that Jesus believes in me. And I've been told that I need to have faith in God, which is a good thing. But what I'm learning is that God has faith in me. The rabbi thinks that we can be like him. That's extraordinary. So do you feel rubbish? Do you feel not good enough? Well, Jesus brings a whole different perspective. Because he looks at your life and he looks at mine and he says, I believe in you. You can be like me. When my spirit comes into you, my love can become the love which wells up in you, and my joy can be the joy that wells up in you. You can be like me. So Peter's defining moment was when he chose to leave behind the old and to start to follow Jesus. And everything changed for him. And please know this, and as we go through Peter's life, you'll come to understand this, that he started following before he really knew who Jesus was. He didn't. He just thought he was a rabbi, but boy, did he want to spend some time with him. Did he have the answers to all of his questions? No, he didn't. Did he know what would lie ahead? Of course he didn't. But it was this defining moment that started an amazing journey of faith for Peter, a nobody who ends up leading the early church that spread across the world, spread across the centuries, so that you and I are sitting in Debenham Community Centre, being a church community together. And Peter played such a fundamental part in seeing the church begin. God believed in Peter. God believes in you. The question is, are we going to listen to that voice in our heads that says, I'm not good enough? And that will hinder our ambition and our potential? Or are we going to listen to the voice of Jesus, who calls us to follow him, who believes in us? And so that we can choose to say, not I'm not good enough, but hey, if you say so. Honestly, when we start doing that, it will bring a change and a transformation to our lives. That it's no longer a lack of confidence. And it's not a confidence in ourselves. It's a confidence in who Jesus says that we are. So, I've done that. So grateful I've done that. Have you? And do you want to? Let me pray. Jesus, I thank you that you don't see us as we see ourselves. Lord, you know that we fail, that we mess up, we sin. You know that there are things which we're not good at, and yet you still believe in us. And you believe that we can be like you. Lord, thank you for Simon Peter, who recognized that he wasn't good enough, but understood your call on his life to start following you. Thank you, God, that I know that I'm not good enough, and yet I've recognized your call to follow you. And Lord, I want to pray for each person here, that they will get to the point, not because they know all the answers or they know what the future will be, but they will be willing to take that first step, that second step, that third step of saying, because you say so, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. Help us to experience the life that you have for us. A life which is not influenced where our joy can be sucked away and taken away and our peace can be lost, but it's a life in all its fullness. Help us, Jesus, to reach out to you and to say yes. Because you say so, I will follow you. Amen.
Intro 2, 3.